Welcome back to Shoujo, the Shoujo anime recap series where I, Sarah, show my friend Joe Shoujo for the first time. Hence the name Shoujo, since I'm showing Joe Shoujo. So word count. How many times did I say Shoujo in 30 seconds? Today, we're starting a new series, and it's, I like it. I'm liking it.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. That's good.
I wasn't sure. This is one.
It is old, and the age shows for sure, but I think the story itself will be good enough to make up for those things.
Okay, yeah. This is one that neither of us have seen, so it's a little bit different than kind of what we've normally done up to this point. For any new listeners on this first episode of a new show, normally Sarah has seen the show before and shows me it. But this time, neither of us have seen it. So this is new to both of us.
Yeah, I we can get more into it. But because this is like a classic shoujo, and I can't say that I have watched that many like old shoujo. So this will make me a more well-rounded shoujo fan. And I've got things to say when we get to the coverage of it. But first, we'll typically start off catching up, since this is how me and Joe get to maintain our friendship through a podcast, since we do not get to see each other that often. So what have you been up to, Joe?
What have I been up to? I beat another one of the Gears of War games. I beat Gears of War Judgment, a game I forget exists.
Mm-hmm. How was it?
It came out after Gears of War 3 and is very much just say, we have the engine, so let's just make another game. It's weird. It changes the button layouts, which is always a mistake, which means I was constantly doing the wrong thing. And it's like a more of an arcadey kind of shooter. Like you just like go through little short areas that are maybe like 5 minutes, and then you get like one out of 3 stars or 3 out of 3 stars or whatever. So it's like a totally different like setup. It was very bizarre.
Weird.
Yeah. But so I beat that. So I am now moving on to Gears 5, which is called Gears 5, not Gears of War 5. If anybody doesn't know, what? I'm playing all of the Gears of War games for some reason. I just decided to do that arbitrarily. So I'm almost at the end. I have 2 games left.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting that they trimmed the title of the series. Is the next one Gear 6?
No, the next one is Gears Tactics, which is a tactics game. It's a spinoff game. They're supposed to make a 6, but it's supposed to be like a prequel one. So I don't know what they're going to do, to be honest. Good I don't Lord. Really know how well Let these it die. Sell.
Yeah. All right.
A OVA series from the 90s. From 1988 to 1989. It's a 6-episode mech series. This was the first thing that Hideaki Anno directed, who's the guy who would go on to make Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is like a big mech thing. So I watched this, and it is like... fascinating. Like it's like they have all this money because it's an OVA, and if you don't know, an OVA is like a original animation video usually that they sell for like pretty expensive. They sell them in like pairs of episodes for like $40 or something, which means that they can make it look really nice, much more than you can do for a TV show. And also there's more time in between the release of episodes, so usually like your expensive animation stuff shows up in OVAs. That being said, this is a story about Earth. There's a bunch of aliens in the galaxy that are going to try to destroy Earth, and they need to send people up into spaceships to fight the aliens. And so we follow a girl whose name is Noriko. Her dad was a commander of one of the spaceships that eventually gets destroyed. She decides that she's going to go out into space and like, you know, live on his legacy or whatever. They pilot these little tiny mechs. And like the first episode is them doing like jumping jacks in the mechs and doing pushups and stuff. It's like pretty goofy. Apparently, this series is supposed to be like a parody of Aim for the Ace, which is like a classic tennis anime or manga.
That sounds more familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is called Aim for the Top because it's supposed to be a combination of Aim for the Ace and Top Gun. So it's like ridiculous. I have
a question about Mecha.
Yeah.
Is it ever not in space? Like, do they ever never go to space?
Let me think. There's usually some space component. Like Neon Genesis Evangelion, they don't go to space. But there's a one time there's an alien that not an alien, there's an angel that's in space. But I don't think they ever go there.
Okay.
But yeah, because usually you're fighting something gigantic because you're in a mech. So you are like oftentimes you'll be fighting other like aliens or something to like justify why you would need a mech that's that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess that's true. It's kind of. Yeah. And they're also like all sci-fi by definition. So it's like pretty often they go to space. Anyway, the thing that's really interesting about Gunbuster is like a lot of it is about how when you move at light speed or close to light speed, time slows down for you, which means if you go to space and on a space mission that only lasts, you know, 10 minutes, that may be 6 months. So like throughout this 6-episode OVA, Noriko is like, you know, for her, it's been like not even a year, but like decades will pass or like enormous amounts of time will pass for other people and they'll like grow up and all this other stuff. And it's just like a really interesting kind of look at that. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's
the
Gunbuster cool.
Shows up, which is like a big fuck off robot, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. It was interesting.
There's Joe, our mech boy. Loves mech.
Oh, yeah, so I should tell people.
All he watches.
It's not all I watch, okay? I'm watching other stuff.
Just wait. Buckle up every week.
Well, okay, freaking because I'm watching all of Gundam.
Idiom, blah, order. Blah, blah.
Yeah, Space Runaway Ideon. I also watched that. That was good. I'm watching along with a podcast, kind of like how our podcasts work, and they like watch mostly mech stuff. So I'm also doing that. But you know, I watch plenty of other stuff. I watched more Ranma.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not that far, but I watched more of it.
Oh, okay.
I'm watching nice. Dragon Ball Daima, which is
what
goofy.
Is that? Is that what is that?
It's a like, it's a Dragon
continuation,
Ball show.
Or is it like a recap?
It takes place. It takes place in between Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super.
Oh, okay.
And the concept is that one of the like king of the demons shows up and wishes that Goku and friends all became like first graders.
Oh,
so they're all tiny.
Lord. That's right. Okay, I remember now.
Yeah, that's the premise of that one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I feel like I watched something else recently too, but I can't
Traitors?
Remember what it is.
Did you watch more Traitors?
No, I haven't watched any more Traitors.
Ah,
sorry, I finished Dan it. To Dan. That was it. I think I talked about that.
Oh
last
God.
Time,
I don't think you talked about it.
Oh, okay. Well, I finished Dan to Dan, all 12 episodes of that. Mm-hmm. Yep, it was fine. I have oddly very few opinions about it.
Yeah,
I think it's fine.
Yes. Eek, I don't know. Maybe our shoujo listeners here will agree with me that it's very off-putting, the things that take place in the first episode.
Oh, yeah.
We already
so
talked
they,
about that.
Yes, they don't
and
do
you,
that
you said
throughout
they
the rest
double
of the show.
Down on the finale with that. Like,
and
take
then they
it back
do it
to
again
where we start.
Yep. So, unfortunately, I think that's just part of what the show thinks is good stakes or something. I don't know. Not great.
Yesterday is cool if I transition into.
Yeah. I've talked enough.
Ask me how I'm doing, Joe.
How are you doing?
Good. Yesterday was one of my brother's 15th. Birthday, and we went to this place called Activate Gaming, which was really cool because it's basically all these rooms with different like games you play, not like video games, but like activity games that you play, and there's like different modes for each one, and you can do competitive or cooperative. But like one of them is like there's lasers and you have to like avoid them and go from side to side, and then one is like running around pressing your color in the right numeric order the fastest. And so it was like very active and I was so winded, and we had an hour to do it and I didn't want to waste. So it was like, go, go, go. It was exhausting, but it was really cool and fun. And so I'm glad to know that that exists now. Sorry, my cat's acting crazy right now. It turns out my brother's friends are cooler than I thought because they like anime. But then one of them said they love Dan to Dan. I was like, oh, dear God, they're getting you so young.
I mean, that's like it's one of the most popular shows right now. I feel like you can't It's not that bad. It's totally fine.
Only shonen, though. Nothing else is clicking with them.
Yeah, because that's what's popular. I went to Activate last week, actually. That's weird that you mentioned that. Yeah, like my friend randomly just like, oh, you want to go to this thing? It was like on Monday. I was like, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And then we just went and I was like, wow, this is crazy.
I liked it a lot. Like, yeah, I need to just do that for exercise or something. it was so exhausting because like it's like cardio. It's very like you just whatever how your like lungs feel after sprinting is like how I felt after doing some of those. So it was cool. So yeah, friend activity idea if I ever do friend gatherings. Let's see. What else? Still rewatching Haikyuu. I went to the gym this week once by like vigorously walked on the treadmill for 40 minutes watching Haikyuu. So nice. Maybe if I just watch anime while I do it, that will make it better for me or easier. Yeah. Because it's literally like a minute or two. It's like 1 minute walk from my apartment to get to our gym complex. So I really ought to be utilizing it more. So maybe I will. Let's see. Went on a date. And then last night after the birthday thing, me and my sister met up with some of her friends to go to this karaoke bar. And I'd like gone up to the bar to ask for some water. And then someone offered to buy me a drink. I said no because I was like, oh, I already have a drink. But I was like, ooh, look at me.
Still got it.
Just disgusting from running around like crazy sweaty. And I still got it. Wow. Yeah. The biggest thing I've been doing this week is I started playing Fields of Mystria, which is a farming sim kind of like styled like Stardew Valley, but I would say more detailed art style. Like I like the character portraits more and I'm really, really liking it. So I've put about like probably 20 hours in this week.
It's like a 2D kind of thing.
It's quite charming. Yes, I'm liking it. So that's what I've been doing for the most part. And then I started watching Rose of Versailles this morning. And I think I went in with pretty neutral expectations. I don't know. I felt like as soon as I started watching it, I was like, okay, yeah, I can get into this. But yeah, there's definitely funny little animation things that happen that we'll talk about. If you want to
go into it. All right. So let's talk about The Rose of Versailles. So this is a new show. Normally for new shows, I'll talk about some of the development pieces of it. And then later on in the show, we'll get into like voice actors and stuff like that. So I'm going to start with the manga here. So the manga Rose of Versailles was created by Ryoko Ikada. She was part of Japan. I pulled this all from Wikipedia, so this is not, you could go look this up yourself. This is not going to be, I didn't do like a biography, like in-depth thing. But she was part of Japan's new left political movement, which happened in the 1960s, which included some ideas about like the French Revolution. So this is where she said she read a lot about the French Revolution. She became a shoujo manga artist in 1967. In the 1960s, shoujo manga was mostly geared towards like elementary school girls and kind of had like very simple kind of plots. But in the 70s, there's a new generation of shoujo authors referred to as the Year 24 group, which is a reference to like the current year of the Showa era in the Japanese calendar. It's like based on who the emperor is, et cetera, et cetera. That's why it's called that. This group of shoujo artists like heavily influenced like manga in general, like going forward with like introducing more complex themes and genres and subjects and stuff. And this is where like Yuri comes in from and like stuff like that, right? So this is where everything gets a little bit more complicated in terms of like what's being published in the shoujo space. Ikeda is often regarded as like a member of this, although there's some stuff about like who's actually in it, because I guess like people did actually correspond and things like that, but was a person in this group, like in this era of artists that like, you know, did more complex stuff. Interestingly, originally the manga was supposed to be a biography of Marie Antoinette, but the editors didn't exactly love that idea and didn't like give a lot of attention to this comic. So she largely seemed to incorporate audience feedback in terms of like how the story was going to progress. Oscar, the main character of the show, was actually introduced as a side character and was apparently modeled after Bjørg Andreessen, the actor. Or I guess that's
Who would I know them? What would I know them from?
What would you know them from? That's a good question. Let me look up where I saw that. Actor, musician, best known for playing 14-year-old somebody.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, I'm looking at photos. I don't know that I know them from anything, but the hair, I don't. Spot on.
Yeah, this is like a person who I just know from, I guess they were in Midsommar in 2019, but you know, older than. Yeah. This, I don't recognize any of these movies, but this is like a famous person that I've seen before. Anyway, that's who Oscar is kind of based off of look-wise. And Oscar was so popular that she eventually becomes the main character, essentially. So originally this was about Marie Antoinette, which is, you know, interesting in terms of like how we'll see how much that shows up in the show, but apparently the manga kind of switches over.
Well, I wonder, I guess at the time, was everyone as well aware of how things went down for her as they are now? Doesn't she get like beheaded or something?
Yeah, she gets killed during the French Revolution.
Yeah, so I wonder if that was like news. I don't know if that like is what takes place in the series, but I wonder how like the readers of this in Japan were, how familiar they were with all that.
From what I looked like, I didn't read through the whole thing because I don't want to like go into plot stuff, but I know that it goes to the French Revolution time period. So I assume that, yeah, she does. It does go up to the part where she gets killed. She's executed. So that's my guess. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, this was like a super popular manga, you know, breakout hit, both in Japan and internationally. Rose of Versailles, the anime, or so the manga came out in 73, and then the anime came out in 79, and it was animated by Tokyo Movie Shinsha Studio, which is now named TMS Entertainment. They've made anime series such as Detective Conan, which maybe you've heard of, the most long-running thing ever. They also
It's a big, when I went to Japan 2019, like there was signage and stuff everywhere. And I was like, isn't this like an old ass anime? Like, why is this everywhere?
Oh, they're still making it. They also animated Lupin the Third. You may have heard of it.
You don't pronounce it Lupin?
Lupin, Lupin.
I thought about naming a ferret that. I thought that'd be such a good name for a ferret.
Yeah, Lupin. Yep. Another huge franchise there. Like kind of like a goofy James Bond type, except he's a thief. They also make Anpanman, which is like a big long-running kids thing. Magic Knight, Ray Earth, Cyber Six, Kami-sama Kiss, and they also made the Fruits Basket remake. So
quite a few big ones under their belt.
Yes. Ones long-running studio cover. Still making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The first
are they
13...
the ones that are... Sorry, yeah. Are they the ones that are going to make the remake of Magic Knight's Ray Earth?
I don't think so. I didn't see that on their Wikipedia page. Okay.
Gotcha.
The first 13 episodes of Rose of Versailles was directed by Tadao Nagahama, who did a lot of like super robot anime. But apparently he dropped out after episode 13 after having a disagreement with a voice actor over some policy. I didn't really understand this in the Wikipedia thing. I didn't look into it more. But from episode 19 onward, it was directed by Osamu Nizaki, who directed classics such as Ashita no Joe, which is like a fighting about boxing, really old. Also directed Aim for the Ace, the thing I just mentioned.
Yes.
As well as the four Hamtaro movies.
Ooh, Hamtaro. Nice.
That's pretty
funny. Quite the diverse portfolio for that director.
Yeah. This was back in the day, so, you know, lots of different, you could jump from thing to thing pretty easily, it seems like. Anyway, so that's what's going on here. We're going to cover two episodes today. We'll probably cover three going forward. I guess we can talk about it, how much we want to cover. These first two episodes, I have written a lot because I have context of like the names of characters and stuff like that. And I tried to look up some historical stuff if you had questions about like who people actually are during the French Revolution. Most of my knowledge from the French Revolution comes from the podcast series Revolutions, which kind of goes through episodically of like things that happen sequentially. It's a really good podcast if you like history. But I listened to that about like 5 years ago, so it's a little bit rusty, but I had some details on some stuff.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right.
Let's do this.
The first episode of The Rose of Versailles is called Oscar, The Destiny of Roses. We open on a stormy night where a man patiently waits to hear news of his newly born child. He hears crying and rushes downstairs. He runs into a room full of women, four of which are clearly his daughters and one is a nanny holding a baby. He demands to know if the baby is a boy this time, as opposed to all the other times, and the nanny shakes her head, saying that she's a beautiful girl, and we see like an image of a baby that mm-hmm. looks like it's just out of the manga panel. A lot of this just seems like it's out of, like, they just took a page mm-hmm. and, like, colored it in. It's pretty cool. The man is distraught and says that the family of generals who command the military and protects the royal family has no need for a girl, and he begins to storm off, but then he gets a devious idea. He returns and grabs the baby, holding her up, and declares that she will be his son, and he names her Oscar as the OP plays.
Oh my god. Okay. I don't like that name. Ah, it could have been a more like flexible name, or one that you could have a cute nickname spun off of.
Oh, I think that's the point, though, right? Like, he didn't pick, like, Jean or something, or, like, John, that could be, like, more neutral. I think it, like, specifically was supposed to be a masculine name.
Yeah. Also, it's like, well, apparently he sucks as a dad. Her sisters, I guess, we haven't seen them since, but.
No, I don't think they're coming back.
And also, it's like, did her mom die then and there? And he just was like, whatever, I just need to know about the kid, not following up.
Yeah.
What happened to the mother?
The mom never has come up in these episodes. We've never seen her. No one's ever referred to her. There's like one point where she's like looking at a picture of a woman that might be her, but even that, I'm not sure.
Just no further information about what the hell happened.
Nope. So the OP plays, and I think the OP is pretty good.
Good. It seems like big text was like a thing, because there's a lot of like text covering, but I think the song is pretty good and the visuals are really good.
Yeah, well, this airs on TVs in the 80s when TVs were really small, so the text has to be big.
Yeah, the square aspect ratio.
Yeah, the 3:4 aspect ratio, and the text has to be big because you're probably watching it on a fairly small TV.
That's right. Crappy quality, so you can't even make out what it says if it's not big.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
There's a lot of like close-ups on people's faces and stuff, which I assume is for that effect, whereas it's like you can see the whole thing. Anyway, so after we finish with the opening, we skip ahead and it's 14 years in the future. We learn that the year is 1769, 20 years before the French Revolution. Today is a royal ball that is being enjoyed by the nobility while they ignore the plight of the common folk. Two women approach General Georges, the man from earlier. They ask him about his mysterious child Oscar. Notably, they refer to her as a she, while he refers to her as a he. So people seem to understand what's happening. Like, that's part of the rumor mill. We cut to Oscar and a boy named Andre sparring with sabers. Oscar is able to disarm Andre, catching his sword through the guard of her blade. And we get a close-up on her face that looks just like a panel from the manga. So they're doing this a lot, where it's like, we go to what could be a panel. She teases Andre and gives him his sword back. They keep sparring. The nanny from before yells at them from out the window to stop playing with swords. We learn that she's Andre's grandma, and that makes him a commoner. So he is not, like, nobility or upper echelon in the way that Oscar is. Andre is like, uh-oh, my grandma's here, Oscar. And then The grandma yells at him for addressing Oscar so casually. We see that the nanny is sewing a dress for Oscar because she wants her to be a like proper lady. We cut to General Jarjet is having a meeting with the current French King Louis the 15th. We learn that there is an opening as the commander of the Royal Guard and that there are currently two candidates. One is some guy's son and the other is Oscar. Jarjet vouches for his son's swordsmanship and Louis is like, oh, your son, huh? Your son? And Jarjet tries to clarify, but Louis laughs and says that he just like he knows he like I know you're like raising your daughter to be your son or whatever. It's funny. The king decides that the position will be filled by whoever can win in a sword fight. And he adds that he hopes Oscar wins because he wants someone elegant to guard Marie Antoinette. We get some exposition about the state of Europe. France and Austria are in constant military conflict, which is draining both countries' resources. Therefore, the Habsburg ruler of Austria, Empress Maria Theresa, proposes a peace treaty between the two countries. To seal the deal, she promised her youngest daughter, Marie Antoinette, to be married to the future king of France, the current Dauphin of France, Louis XVI. We cut to Oscar and the general. He tells her that if she becomes commander of the guard, it will be a high honor and she'll be responsible for guarding Marie Antoinette. He picks up the captain's uniform and tells her to put it on. Oscar is unimpressed and declares that she doesn't want to babysit some girl.
She calls her a shrew or something.
Yeah, she's like really mean.
Hates her.
About it. Yeah, it's pretty good. Elsewhere, Andre is looking for Oscar. We see an enraged general throw Oscar down the stairs, calling her a fool. She leaves and he calls after her that the match is tomorrow and that the king himself will be there. So she better be there. And then Oscar runs off. We cut to the dueling yard where everything's being set up. Everyone has come here to see the mysterious lady Oscar, but she's still not there. The general is terrified that Oscar isn't showing up since the match is in 30 minutes and she's not there as the king arrives. We cut to a fancy lad riding a horse with his retainer. He is Girardel. I don't know how to say it. These are all French names, so I'm going to pronounce all of these wrong.
Thank God you're doing the recap.
So he's Girardel, the other duelist, so like the other person that could be the commander of the guard. His retainer is like, shouldn't we be going to the duel site, my lord? And Girardel is reluctant because like he doesn't want to become commander of the guard by beating a woman in a duel. That's hardly an honorable way to become the commander. They crest a hill and they find Lady Oscar just waiting for them. She's like, hey, I've been waiting for you. I'm Lady Oscar. And Girardel's like, wow, aren't you beautiful? Anyway, I guess we should go to the dueling grounds or whatever. Oscar tells him that she has no intention of becoming the commander of the guard. And Girardel's like, oh, well, that's perfect. I'll let the king know that you withdrew. But then Oscar clarifies that she isn't running away because she's afraid of Girardel and came here to prove that point to him. Girardel laughs at the thought that he would lose to some woman. Oscar clarified that she does not want to shame him in front of a crowd, so I don't want to beat you at swordplay in front of everybody. Or is he afraid of losing to a woman? Girardel gets off of his horse and is like, yeah, we can duel if you want, but I don't know how I feel about pointing a sword at a woman. Oscar points her sword at him and says that she might be a woman, but she's also a warrior. Girardel draws his sword. They duel. Eventually, Oscar slices his shirt and wins. Girardel wants to keep going, though, and she ends up disarming him, similar to how she disarmed Andre earlier. We cut to an angry King Louis. He's like, where the hell are these kids? Well, I've been waiting here. And just then, Girardel's retainer rides in and declares that the two were dueling in the fields, and everybody is horrified. We cut to General Jarjet as he slaps Oscar. He tells her that defying the king's orders makes her a traitor. And if she wasn't so rebellious and just did what he said, then none of this would have happened. We jump to the nanny who's getting drunk on wine. Andre is like, come on, grandma, you got to slow down. And they talk about how Oscar is charged with treason. And then the grandma falls to the floor and laments that Oscar is in a battle between her future into either manhood or womanhood.
I like nanny.
Yeah.
Just hammering.
Just pounding them back. Pretty good. Let's see. Andre goes to see Oscar. He knocks on her door and Oscar performatively sits down in a chair and pretends to read a book before letting him in. It starts storming outside and Andre goes to close the window, but Oscar very dramatically tells him to leave it open because she likes storms. Oscar starts to get philosophical as she wonders what she should do because she really doesn't want to babysit some royal. Andre is like, is this really what the problem is? Like, is this what you're like worried about? And Oscar looks at him, shocked that he would even suggest otherwise. The wind blows out the candles in the room, leaving them in the dark. And Oscar tells Andre to leave. It's super dramatic.
So dramatic.
We see a carriage return to the estate. General Jarjez has returned and wants to talk to Andre. He tells Andre that the king was pissed, but Ghirardelle told him that she beat him in a duel and that Oscar should be made the commander of the guard. He's like, Andre, you're her best friend. You have to convince her to take this position. I can't. She's not going to listen to me because, you know, my daughter's rebellious or whatever.
Because I'm a shitty dad and I don't deserve her respect.
Yeah, because also I'm like her like shitty
pushing
dad.
Her down the stairs. God.
We pan over to see that outside in the rain, Oscar is listening in on their conversation. It's the next day. Oscar and Andre go for a ride on their horses. They stop at a lake and take a break. Andre starts reminiscing about the past while Oscar wonders how long it'll take for him to just like tell her to become the commander or whatever. Andre starts whistling on a blade of grass and Oscar has had enough. She's like, all right, you gotta knock that off. Don't you just tell me to be the commander already. Andre refuses, saying that she should just do what she wants to. And she's like, oh, I see here. Yeah, you're doing some reverse psychology, huh? You think the rebellious Oscar is just going to do whatever the opposite of what you say? You're trying to coerce me to doing this. And Andre's like, what? And then he like grabs her by the collar and she shoves him. So Andre comes back with a punch to the jaw.
I thought that was crazy at first. I was like, that's escalated. Like, yes. What's happening?
They both look at each other and they're like, oh, are we going to do this? The answer is yes, they are going to do this. And they get into a long, manly fight with each other. Andre is winning and eventually knocks Oscar like into a tree. There's a moment of silence where the background brightens as Oscar decides to makes her decision about what her future is going to be. She gets back up and Andre thinks to himself that Oscar is finally spirited. They continue to fight until they're both exhausted on the ground.
I like how there's like literal twinkle, like a twinkle in their eye sometimes, like their eye just like shines and with a little light effect on it to show like determination and stuff like that. It's so funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of flair in this. That's really good. They're both on the ground. Andre reaches for Oscar's hand. Oscar tells him that he was listening, or that she was listening in on her father and his conversation last night. Andre tells her that he really does think that she should make her own decision. Oscar remounts her horse and starts to ride away as Andre yells after her that it's not too late for her to become a woman again. We cut to Andre letting General Jarjez know that he has no idea what Oscar's going to do. General Jarjez is like, well, this is unacceptable, and goes to like see Oscar, but he only gets to the foot of the stairs and is shocked to see Oscar in her full military uniform. She walks down the stairs thinking to herself that she isn't doing this for her father or anyone else. We get a scene where Oscar and Andre are on horseback as rose petals dot the screen. A voiceover tells us that the day Oscar left her woman behind and took her first steps into adulthood, she was 14, as we cut to credits.
14 is crazy.
Ass was different.
To be the commander of the military? Yeah.
Of the crazy. Royal Guard. I think this, I don't know. I mean, this is like definitely like a nepotism position, right? Like there are actual people there who know how to do that job.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
It's very funny.
First episode. Andre's cute and freaking Oscar is so abrasive. I'm assuming it's going to be like she becomes friends with Maria and then like starts to soften a little bit. Hopefully she is sharp and prickly right now.
Dude, I love Oscar. She's so funny. The part where like Andre knocks on the door and she goes from like staring at a portrait of her mom to like sitting into a chair pretending to read because she doesn't want her childhood friend to think that she's not doing something elegant is so funny to me.
She's very dramatic.
She just like opens to a random page and then halfway through her like musing about what she should do, she throws the book against the wall. It's like so extra.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of, it's I don't know if we're going to get more context for, like, you know, obviously like, did he raise her specifically, like, trying to hide gender, or just to raise as a son, but, like, not hiding the fact that she's actually a woman?
Yeah.
Like, because, like, the secret's out. It's no secret at all, I guess. And it's, like, different people decide to address her different. Well, he's the only one calling her a he.
Right. Yeah.
Like, so hopefully we dive more into, like, how this came to be.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like Ghirardelle recognizes immediately that she's a woman. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, she is not hiding it at this point. But this is also, like, this is the episode where she decides what her gender path is going to be. Much more related to, like, gender roles in terms of, like, what your job is going to be, more so than how you're going to present yourself. So I think that, like, is interesting in terms of, like, it's a thing everybody knows, but everyone just kind of goes along with it. And it seems like they go along with it because they just find it kind of interesting. Because, like, King Louis is just like, oh, yeah, I know about your, like, your daughter who you're raising as a son. That's kind of funny. But I guess it would be cool if you had, like a pretty woman guarding Marie Antoinette. That would be, like, elegant and fun. But, like, not really taking it seriously. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Yeah, and that's just episode one. And we've already got a lot to think about. So this is going to be...
Well, and even, like... Ghirardelle, when he loses the duel, he does go to the king and is just like, but she, like, won, so you should promote her, which was interesting.
He had pretty eyes.
Mm-hmm. He's gonna show up next episode. He might be a character that shows up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like, they all respect the ability, like, Oscar's ability, so that's interesting.
Yes.
She decides to be a man by putting on military uniform and, well, like, picking up a man's position.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I feel like we don't actually hear her talk that much. It's a lot of, like, discussion about her, like, so far. She's just been much more like a character and with actions and not words. So it'll be interesting to hear how she, like, talks, refers to herself and all that. Like, is she going to introduce herself as a dude, or... is it just the mindset, or is it just throwing away what womanhood would be, but not necessarily trying to become a dude?
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be the most, like, thematically interesting show we've covered, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and part of the reason she, like, so clearly hates the idea of guarding Marie Antoinette is, like, I have to guard this, like, prissy woman who's, like, the type of prissy woman that I was supposed to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like a rejection of that, which we'll see. I'm interested to see how that goes when they actually interact. We only get introduced to Marie on episode two.
Let's get to it.
Episode two is called Flutter, Austria's Butterfly. We open on Lady Oscar thinking about her first job to receive Marie Antoinette starts today. General Jarges rushes in to inform her that there has been a plot, or they know about a plot to kidnap Marie Antoinette, and tells Oscar to stand in as a double. He hands her a dress so she can like pretend to be her. But Oscar throws down the dress, disgusted. Jarges is like, "You're not going to abandon your duty, right?" And then Oscar turns to him and draws her sword, saying that she swears on her uniform and sword that she will fulfill her duty as the OP plays.
Well, I can see that being annoying if, like, you've just decided, like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this way, and then immediately have them, you know, try to take advantage of the part of her she's trying to get rid of, were you just brought on because you could play as a double and that you're a woman and not for other reasons, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I didn't come here to be Marie's double. No. I'm the commander of the guard. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to ask this of a dude. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, like, what a jerk.
Yep.
We jump back and we get some exposition saying that it's 1770 now. And Marie Antoinette is going to France for her marriage. She's being received at the sandbank of the Rhine River on the border between France and Austria. And this was decided after a full year of negotiations. So they've known about this for a long time.
Much time passed between the first episode and this, or 1 year? Okay. 15 now.
15.
Big boss on the scene.
That's right. We jump to Vienna, where we see a young Marie Antoinette chasing around a butterfly in a fountain. Her marquise find her and, like, scold her for getting her dress wet, but she's, like, totally unbothered and is like, "Look, I caught this butterfly," and shows him the butterfly. It flies away as she watches.
Okay, her giggles. I'm like, shut up. I hate it. I hate the weird giggles and like manic pixie vibes or whatever is happening here. The like overly girly. Yes. But yeah, no. So far I'm like, she's being everything that Oscar is dreading.
Yes, this is, it's perfect. She's like the platonic ideal of like the carefree young woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, dude, Oscar's gonna hate you.
so much.
It's ridiculous. It's like way over the top. It's great. From the Vienna Palace, Empress Maria Theresa watches Marie and thinks to herself that she might have made a mistake by giving her to France. We get an incredible dream sequence where like an image of Marie is burned up and disintegrates, and it's awesome. What?
So cool.
You didn't think this was cool? I thought this was cool.
I mean, it didn't. I was like, oh, she didn't fully disintegrate, just her body and her head's floating there. But I was just more distracted by that. Like her hair and head were still like they didn't fully eviscerate her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I was distracted. I wasn't like, oh, yeah. Cool effects.
Yeah. The Empress snaps out of it and remembers that this was the only way to secure peace between the nations. We cut to Marie wearing an elegant red dress. Her attendants fawn over her as she admires herself in the mirror. Empress Theresa comes in and is very seriously tells her that she, Maria, has very good virtues, but she's also capricious, overly playful, and a shallow thinker. She hands her a scroll with instructions for her to follow once she gets to France. She's like, read this over every day so you like know how to carry yourself.
I was like, damn, shallow thinker, savage mom. Yeah, like,
I mean, you gotta tell her, like, listen, they're gonna eat you alive there unless you like get a hold of it.
I think she said with the scroll she handed, read this on this day of every month. So I don't know what that is gonna entail necessarily.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll see. Marie sadly looks at her mother, who she may not see again for a long time. Time grows closer to her departure. Marie cries and tells her mother that she doesn't want to go. Her mother gives her a ring and they share one last embrace. We cut to a sequence where Marie Antoinette passes through a crowd in a carriage and she arrives at the neutral handoff zone. We cut to Lady Oscar checking in on the guards while riding her white horse. Andre comes up to her and tells her that security is so high that there's no way anybody will try anything. And then we like pan the camera over to two men in a crowd running off into the forest where they meet a caped man with an enormous hat.
Mm-hmm. You love a big hat.
I love a big hat. This guy is like real goofy about being the villain. It's so good.
Very much so.
One of his men is like, everything is in place. Duke Orleon in the Cape Man is immediately like, dude, I told you not to use like people's names. And he stabs that guy just on spot, killing him right there.
Loose end, gone.
It's so funny.
Well, like there's no blood in this. Everyone's getting stabbed and there's no blood.
No.
Oh, man. Crazy.
Duke Orleon orders his henchman Jean to come out. And we see that Jean is dressed up just like Marie Antoinette. His henchmen run off and Duke Orleans thinks to himself that he'll foil the wedding and then he'll become the next king of France.
I totally thought that was a chick, not a dude.
It's weird because I think it is, but they keep referring to it as a guy. So maybe it's like a boy. I don't know.
I guess.
The dub's a little weird. I didn't pay too much attention to like what they were actually saying.
Oh, okay. The translation. The dub.
I'm sorry, not the dub. The subtitles I meant.
Okay, yeah.
We cut to Marie Antoinette. She's been informed that as part of the deal, she can't bring anything from Austria with her, including her clothes and the ring that her mother gave her. She refuses this and then runs off. Outside, Lady Oscar gets news that there's been some issue with Marie. Ghirardelle shows up and tells Lady Oscar that Marie is complaining about the marriage. And he's like, yeah, you know how women are.
Oh my god.
She tells him to go inform the king of the delay, and Lady Oscar is like, god, I hate it when someone changes their mind at the last minute. And Andre laughs, pointing out that this is exactly what she did last episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You tell her.
Oscar is like, I am nothing like Marie Antoinette, thank you. It's very funny. Oscar then sees an attendant that looks just like Marie enter the building that Marie is in for the handoff, and she wants to go investigate, but Andre is like, you're just like too on edge, like nothing's gonna happen. Inside the building, all the attendants are looking for Marie, who's run off to hide somewhere. She comes out and sees another attendant posing as her, like she sees the henchman that's posing at her, like beckon her over. The henchman suggests that they swap places so that Marie can escape the building as an attendant. The henchman reveals herself now dressed as Marie in like the dress and stuff like that, so that the actual Marie Antoinette can exit the building. We cut to the stand in at the handoff as she walks from the Austrian side to the French side as the handoff has taken place. Outside, Lady Oscar sees Marie dressed as an attendant leave the building, and she recognizes that's a different attendant than she saw enter, and then follows after her. Marie goes to a cave where I guess the like henchman told her to go.
Must have, right? Must have. Why else would she go?
There's
there?
No other way. She'd go there. However, in the cave, Duke Orleans' men appear in attempt to abduct her. But right then, Lady Oscar jumps in and punches two of them out. The rest draw swords, and Lady Oscar starts fighting them. The battle rages in the cave, and Marie is having a great time cheering on Oscar. She's like, woohoo!
Very carefree.
Yeah, she's like, doesn't seem like she's in mortal peril at all.
No.
Outside, Ghirardelle asks Andre where Oscar is. Andre tells him that she's gone, and Ghirardelle is like, but the handoff already happened, so like, she needs to do the commander of the guard thing now. Is this one of her womanly whims to just run off like this? And Andre just kind of smiles at him. A guard asks for Oscar's orders, and Ghirardelle tells him that he's gonna stand in as the commander, and they move out, so the whole procession leaves. Back in the cave, Marie and Oscar have made it outside, pursued by henchmen. Oscar mounts her horse and pulls Marie onto it. They ford across a river while three henchmen follow on horseback. Oscar cuts them down one by one, leaving one injured. She interrogates him by asking him if he's English, and he's not. And she's like, okay, well, who are you? But before she can get any more information out of him, a knife flies into his back, killing him instantly. Oscar looks up to see the cloaked man on a horse before he rides off, and she wonders who that could possibly be.
The villain.
The villain. The big bad is here, and he's throwing knives.
That hat makes it so obvious. He's just giving away his intentions with that hat.
It's so good. I love his stupid hat. We cut back to the stand-in. She's about to be received by King Louis and his family when Lady Oscar rushes in and tells him that she's a fake and the real Maria is right here. Marie Antoinette walks into the light and sparkles as everybody recognizes that she's the real royal one here. That's the Habsburg.
Well, I'm like, she just looks, they were fine with the other one until she walked in, yeah. And they were like, wow, she's sparkling, she's gotta be the one.
Yeah, it's really funny.
It's like, just dawns on all of them at the same time, without a word being spoken, just like, yes. I thought there was gonna be like a debate, and they were gonna like pull the wig off to reveal or something like that.
Nope, just immediately like, obviously it's this one, look at how pretty she is, and everyone's like, yeah, you know, that checks out.
Yeah.
The fake Marie makes a break for it as Oscar chases her, however he is cut down by the Duke Orleans, who immediately just like slashes across her. The wig falls off, falls down dead. Oscar is like, why did you kill them? They were unarmed. But the Duke says that they were traitors and they deserved it.
Yeah, just again, he's just gonna have no henchmen by episode 5 at this rate.
He's like killed almost as many guys as Oscar has of his own guys. Like, it's very funny.
Yeah, they all look the same. They're all just like slightly different haircut henchmen.
Yep. It's like a set of all brothers. It's one family.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Let's see. We cut to King Louis introducing Marie to her future husband, Louis the 16th. Louis the 16th is an awkward boy. King tells his son to go kiss his future bride, and Louis the 16th walks over and kisses her on the cheek. Marie thinks to herself that her future husband just kissed her, and her heart didn't flutter or anything because she doesn't like him.
Nope. But big bummer for her.
Yeah,
because I'm assuming it's like, I don't know, she probably fantasized about how he was going to be in reality, hitting hard.
Yep.
And he introduces the others.
Yes, the little... king introduces the rest of the family, Luby's two younger brothers and his cousin, Duke Orleone.
He's okay. He's the cousin. So like he would, I'm like trying to think of what his plan is going to be.
Okay.
To succeed.
So
yeah, take out all the kids.
He's got to take out all the sons, and then it goes to him.
Okay.
Yep. That has to be the plan.
Mm-hmm.
We can get into like what the actual history is after this. But we're almost done here. The king announces that they're going to go to Versailles for the wedding. In the carriage, Marie looks out the window at Oscar. She's like, it's crazy how if Oscar wasn't there, I'd probably be dead, huh? And her attendant's like, yeah, Oscar's a brave woman. And Marie is like, Oscar's a woman?
She fell for it.
Yeah.
Only one ever.
She looks back at Oscar and smiles, and sparkles shine across the screen. The carriage procession makes its way across the setting sun. On horseback, we see two men. One of them says, Master Fersen, this is Marie Antoinette's procession. And Fersen looks on as the narrator tells us that the fateful day of the French Revolution will soon occur, even though it's 20 years from now, which will bring Oscar, Antoinette, and Fersen together as their destinies converge at the Palace of Versailles, where decadence and conspiracy swirls as we cut to credits.
I thought that was a good transition from like the procession moving in the sunset to the silhouettes on the hill and then... That was a nice little scene.
Yeah. No, I really like how they do the transitions here. They do a good job of like getting from place to place. And even these narrations, like going from like, we're going to Versailles now, where decadence and conspiracy, things are about to go crazy. It's
very
The palace intrigue, you won't believe.
Narrator's having a blast.
Yeah. So that's their two episodes. What did you think?
I'm liking it. Now I feel like I need to brush up on friggin' French history. and then it's because like they're all Japanese saying these names, so I'm like, should I be saying them the way that they're saying them, or like, well, I know them to sound like the Jar. What's her dad's name?
I'm saying Jarjays. I don't know if that's right.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'm liking the plot. I guess this is like the first, because there's like kind of historical based shoujo, but it's like in fantasy versions and not like depicting actual history from what I've watched. So it'll be interesting comparing like what actually happens and what they took from history for this series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think, Joe?
I really like this. I think it's very fun. I like the characters. I like how they are presented. I like the animation quite a bit. Some parts where they move are a little bit awkward because it seems like they kind of jump a little bit further frames than you might want because, you know, they're like manually drawing of these frames for a TV show that they made 40 episodes of, right? But individual stills, like anytime they like pause on a frame, it looks fantastic. And I really like
very
that.
Like what you think of with the like sparkles and thick eyelashes and like, oh man, it's good.
Highly stylized, highly expressive.
Yes. You're digging Oscar. I'm going to have to see more, I think. Because right now it's like punk teenager vibes, which I don't love. So, but if we're going into the French Revolution and we see her with longer hair on the cover of the series, so maybe when she's a little older, I'll like her more.
Yeah, I think we're going to have time skips in this series. I mean, if we go to the French Revolution, that's 20 years, right? So by the time that happens, she'll be like 35. So we will be I'm assuming we'll be jumping in the future. And I think we're going to get way more into palace intrigue stuff. Especially with, you know, if the beginning of the manga had Marie Antoinette as the main character, we'll probably get a lot of stuff with her.
Yeah.
And if I look at, I tried to look at the Wikipedia of the major characters because I was trying to like look up people's names. It doesn't seem like the adults show up all that much. Like her dad doesn't have an entry in characters. Oh, no. Yeah, no, he doesn't have anything, and neither does like the nanny or any of those people. So,
dang, we love the nanny.
I know, maybe she'll come.
Shame, shame.
Well, we'll have to see. But there's a lot of royalty here, so I'm excited about how this will go.
So, is Versailles? I'm not as familiar with French geography and stuff. Is that like a capital, it's or the, just like a vacation home of the royal family?
Yeah, so that's where the royal palace is. So the Palace of Versailles is on the estate, you know, the Versailles estate, which is where is it? Let me see if I can find where it is. It's like a really small, or like a fairly small city that is outside of Paris. It'd be like a suburb length distance.
Gotcha.
Away.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where the king lives.
I hope we're getting, because we, interestingly, I don't, like, it seems like with Andre and his proximity to, like, Oscar and stuff, like, it seems like the series kind of more loose. I don't know if maybe it's the household she grew up with was less strict with, like, mingling between classes, and once she gets to the palace it's going to be different and we get to see more like class disparity or not. It's a much more like open-minded version maybe of France than it would have been at the time, since they have Oscar running the military and all that.
Yeah,
she's getting beaten around more than the servants are.
This is the past, you know, you gotta hit your kids. Yeah. Manly to slap someone and to get into a manly fight with your childhood friend.
Well, I'd like to meet her sisters too, because surely they're like, yeah, dad sucks, or they resent her because, like, because he decided she was going to be the son, he gave her the attention that he never did them, or some weird like sibling rivalry or something.
Do you have any history questions?
Is Oscar based off anyone? Just a fictional character.
Yeah, totally fictional.
Not character. Based off anyone. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I know I listened to something about Marie Antoinette at some point, but all I can remember is that she was beheaded, and like hated by civilians for some reason, like, but I feel like it was misconstrued what her intentions were, maybe, or something. But I don't know if we should talk about that. I think it's common knowledge, so it's fine. It's like,
yeah,
history. No spoilers for history,
because that's not what's going to happen in the show necessarily. So,
yeah.
Marie Antoinette, you know, gets assassinated, has like famous lines like "Let them eat cake," that kind of thing. She gets represented historically like very unfavorably, even though it seems like actual Marie Antoinette was like much more of like a savvy political player and like more sympathetic to, you know, like the revolutionary kind of plight a little bit, like kind of understood what it was. Like, she was not so callous. Like, she's kind of
villainized.
Yeah. As kind of like the Paris Hilton, a little bit of like, you're just kind of like the know nothing like royal who's gotten everything they ever wanted. It does not seem like that is really the case. And she's like much more of a political actor than, you know, history gives her credit for. That being said, she was hated for two reasons. One is that she's a Habsburg, which, are you familiar with the Habsburgs?
Nope.
So the Habsburgs were a family of rulers, which is kind of a weird thing, but like Maria Theresa is a Habsburg. They're a dynasty of like nobility. That would often be, they were good at accumulating titles to various different kingdoms, and they were also good at being stand-ins. So like, if you had a kingdom that like the leader died or something, and you just need somebody to fill the position so it doesn't dissolve into anarchy, or you're not taken over by somebody else, then you could get a Habsburg to fill in for you, because you know that they have name legitimacy, they have connections to other nobility. It's like a nice secure thing. It's kind of like how if a company's like founder dies or something and they need a new CEO, you grab a CEO of some other thing so that you have some legitimacy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they're like a little bit like free agents in terms of like kings, but also, you know, at this time they had a huge amount of power.
Freelancing royalty.
Yeah, like Empress Maria Theresa is like, you know, the Empress of Austria, but also like she's the Holy Roman Emperor. She has all these other titles. She's the King of Hungary, like all these other places that are like really complicatedly like connected to each other. Like, especially the Austrians had like a really complicated sovereignty system where it's not just like France was kind of uncharacteristically like there's just one France. You're just the King of France. And all of this is French, right? Like, it's a big area, and not like how, you know, Prussia is, where it's like a bunch of different places that are all formed together to form one big place, like a confederation. So it's like really weird.
Okay.
But this, what?
Oh, yeah. Nope. I'm following.
But yeah, but they didn't like her because she's a Habsburg, which is like you come from the family of rich nobles. Like, that's what your family is famous for, being rich nobles. And also, she's an Austrian, so she's not even French. So that's why people did not like her.
I guess was right, because it said like, oh, they were warring and then they made this treaty. Is that because Teresa had recently taken over Austria and that's why the treaty was reached? How long has she been in Austria?
Yeah, let me, I don't actually know.
Know everything ever, Joe.
See, Maria Theresa became emperor in 1745.
A while.
That's Holy Roman Empress. Hold on. Queen of Bohemia.
Okay.
Archduchess of Bohemia. Austria, Queen of Hungary and Croatia. This is what I'm talking about in terms of like, it's hard. Yeah, in the 40s, sometime in the 1740s is like when she was
Statser.
In charge. This was
stacked.
What would that be? Not the Seven Years' War. That was against Prussia. One of those wars. I don't know. Like, they're always at war, you know, what these guys are like. France and Austria share a border, which is why they're going to war pretty often.
Yeah. Okay. And is Duke Orléans?
Okay,
is that how you said it?
Yeah. So the Duke of Orléans is a real position. So people become, so Orléans a place, like it's a city, or at the time it was like a principality or something. Yeah. And you became the Duke of that. So that's a position that's inherited. They were the cousins of the king. The thing about this show is that the Duke of Orléans was not one guy. Kind of at this time, there was one Duke of Orléans who was an old man at the time this would have happened. And then there's a later Duke. So it's Louis-Philippe the First is the one that would be in charge in 1760 or whatever. And then Louis-Philippe the Second, who's the guy who's around during the French Revolution, would be the guy who would try to get the throne. Like, he would be that age group. So I think they're trying to do Louis-Philippe the Second here. But he wouldn't have been the Duke of Orléans at the time because his dad was still alive.
Okay.
If that makes sense. But he is. So he became the Prince of the First Blood because I don't think Louis the 15th had multiple sons that lived very long. Like, one of them died when they were like two.
At least he had sons. It's pretty good. More than Oscar's dad can say.
One of them dies. Yeah, so I think they're all gonna die of like various things.
Okay.
Let me see. He got married when he was 15 and his wife was 22. Oh, she was older than him.
Okay, that's interesting.
They had 10 children, 8 girls and 2 boys. Of the boys, only the elder, Louis, survived childhood, while the other did not live to rule. So there was only one other kid, but the other one died during childhood. That was a boy. So the Duke of Orléans was the next in line. And Louis-Philippe the Second was an early supporter of the French Revolution. So he would have been considered like a traitor kind of in the way that this was a supporter of constitutional monarchy as opposed to absolute monarchy, which is what it was at the time.
And is like the general take now that like the if we look back at it now, it's like, yeah, they should have rebelled kind of situation, like is warranted or is for the better of most French folks?
Yeah, so the French Revolution has like a little bit of a murky legacy because there were kind of two different revolutions that happened. There was the first one, which is essentially more of a political revolution of the king has absolute power. They shouldn't have absolute power. They should be, you know, a constitutional monarchy, which was very popular at the time, even though it was popular amongst like a kind of like a step down from the most high aristocracy. So like more elites, that was popular then, right? And that's essentially like what the American Revolution was, much more of a political one, where like, oh, well, the elites of America want to rule, not listen to the king there, right? But it wasn't like a populist uprising. Then there was the second part, which was more of the populist uprising, which was more about like, you know, getting rid of the third estate, which is like the religious stuff, and like doing all these other things. Like that was much more revolutionary in terms of like stuff that would come later with like the Bolshevik revolutions and like communism and stuff like that. But that one also had the Reign of Terror in it and had like some of the more kind of brutality stuff. The French Revolution ends with Napoleon becoming the emperor of Imperial France. So if you look at the whole long term thing, people have a lot of different views about it. So people tend to view the First Revolution pretty favorably. They tend to view the ideas of the second part of the revolution favorably, even if they didn't like the execution of it. And then nobody really liked the
outcome,
the Napoleon. Yeah, I mean, it's seen as like a failure overall, I think.
Okay.
But it did like inspire a lot of stuff that came on later, and it did have a lot of knock-on effects. So like the French Revolution is the reason why the Haitian Revolution happened, for example. And a lot of revolutions that came later modeled like their constitutions and stuff over things that happened in the French Revolution. So it's like historically important for inspiring other stuff, even if it didn't like succeed in producing a lasting republic.
Damn, Shoujo, the podcast is taking quite the turn. We're a history podcast now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that they like, because I mean, they do explicitly in the first episode say that like, oh, all these people are enjoying this party while out in the fields everything's going real bad. And like, part of the tipping point of like when things are going to start getting really bad is France helps out the U.S. in the American Revolution, which was just a terrible idea. It just totally bankrupted them, and while they were already having money problems, it was incredibly stupid. So 1776 is when we should start seeing the financial situation go real south for them. So the French Revolution starts in 1789. Like that's when the storming of the Bastille happens and things like that. And then Louis XVI gets executed in 1793.
Gotcha. So cool. Well, that's our French intro, I don't know, French Revolution, like setting the vibes, getting us all in the period and what's going on. So this will, I'm excited to see, this will be the oldest anime I've ever watched for sure, and I'm excited to see more of it.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. I'm glad it like doesn't look, because I mean, it does look old, but it doesn't look that old. Like, I still think the effects work. I still think like it works as a show. It's dramatic at points.
Yeah, it's mostly just like the corny effects, I think, that are like the most, like that age it the most. Like all the, you know, they had to make do with the limitations at the time, but it doesn't make it unwatchable by any means. So hopefully everyone listening is down to try this out with us.
Yeah. And I do think in some ways, like being more striking and dramatic makes it more engaging to watch than some newer stuff I've seen. Because like the part where like Marie Antoinette like dissolves in a red void, it feels like it's going for something so much more dramatic than things in modern shows don't even try to do. Like the ambition seems higher on this show.
Yeah, I also feel like because I feel like that it's easier to follow what's happening in the show with like our newer anime. There's a lot more frequent cuts and like unclear exactly what's happening, or like where we'll get confused on what it was, who said what, or were they thinking it or saying it, things like that. So like this one's a lot easier to follow like every detail that's happening in the show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah, look at us go. Okay, so this is our fifth series now.
Fifth series, yep.
Look at us rolling out.
Do you want to cover three episodes next or two?
Do you think they're going to be as detailed as this? If we're going to talk more about like historical context, then maybe we should like, or at least maybe until it's a more settled like.
Yeah.
Time within the story,
right?
Like, because if there's more time skips and stuff, maybe we'll do at least the next episode. We should cover two more, I think.
Okay, yeah, because it's 40 episodes, so I'm assuming it's going to start being more episodic, or like have like little tiny arcs that are a little bit more straightforward. But yeah, depending on who we get introduced to and who I have to look up if they historically existed at all, maybe two episodes would be good. Okay, so we'll watch the next two.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so episodes 3 and 4 next time on Shoujo.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, if you enjoyed this podcast and this is your first episode you've listened to, then welcome. We've covered 4 other shows that you can go back and listen to and watch along if you want. They've all been pretty good. We haven't had any misses so far. You can also rate us 5 stars on your platform and your podcast platform of choice. That would really help us out. Tell your friends about the show. Tell people you know about the show. If you know other people that like anime, if you know people that are interested in maybe the upcoming Studio MAPPA animated movie Rose of Versailles and want to watch the original thing before you're able to view that, then join us. I'm sure at the end of this, we will at some point watch that movie if it's made available to us in some way we can watch it. So you can look forward to that. If there are any like historical inaccuracies of any of the stuff I just said, which I'm sure there are many because I'm just saying this off the dome, please email us at shoujopod@gmail.com. Please be nice to me about this because I am just trying to remember things I know from history.
He's a fragile soul.
I'm not a history, I'm not an expert, so,
could have fooled me.
If you do know inconsistencies, let me know because I do want to try to make this as accurate as possible without me having to do an extraordinarily amount of work.
Yeah, no work.
I mean,
less work.
I can't be listening to that history thing again. It was super long. But yeah.
Okay, now I'm like, that's what I'm going to listen to as I played Fields of Mysteria right after this. I'm just going to listen to freaking French history now.
Revolutions. That podcast is great, actually. Like, I learned so much stuff about, like...
Yeah, you recommended it probably, like, 2 months ago on the pod. So, yes, I remember, because you were listening to it on your drive from your camping trip from hell.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's, like, the only way I understand European history that isn't just, like, random moments and being, like, okay, so Germany is, like, 10 different places all combined into one because they all decided they're ethnically German, even though these places didn't necessarily like each other. Like, okay, sure. Why not?
This is the podcast to cover all your needs.
That's right. We're going to talk about gender a lot. I get a feeling this is going to be a lot about gender and a lot about...
Joe loves talking about gender.
We love gender here.
Yeah.
So
we like ladies kicking ass.
Yeah, I like it when she disarms people. It's funny. And she flings their sword and they're like, oh shit.
And we hope that she can eventually come to terms that she can embrace her femininity and still be strong.
They should give Marie Antoinette a sword.
You don't have to reject. I don't know. Right now, I'm like, she's annoying. I don't know if I'll like her.
What, the 14-year-old princess?
Open mouth giggles too much. Yes, I hate it. And yeah, and then like, I'm getting the manic vibes from, we'll see, but this is all be interesting because we're starting, I'm assuming by the end of the series, we'll be at much different places with these characters.
Yeah.
So it'll be cool to see.
Yep.
This will be the longest span of time we've covered because all our series have been like in the moment, except for Chihaya Furu had like a long ass flashback. But other than that, it's all within a short time.
Yeah, we've had no big time skips.
So yeah, and maybe they'll do these well, because normally I don't like time skips.
What did we learn?
Leave the butterflies alone.
Just don't catch the butterflies. Don't just walk into a fountain.
Leave them alone.
If somebody comes to see you, always pretend like you're doing something sophisticated. Just grab a book and sit down so that they know that you're all business.
Uh-huh.
God, that was so funny. Right.
Yeah, so take those little nuggets of knowledge.
Incorporate them into your life.
Yes. And let us know how that all went when we talk next week on Shoujo.
Yep. See ya.
Bye.